come and look into my frozen eyes. Come and let me
almost forgot. I know, I almost forgot that song. Thank you.
Listening to Free Radio.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me. We're trying to, I think, we've been working on a computer, and I think I unmuted what I muted earlier, and so the next song we're going to play on the computer, and it's such a beautiful song by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. The last band you heard was Ultimate Spinach. I don't know the name of that damn song. What's the name of that damn song, Hans?
That was called...
Into the mic.
Hip Death Goddess.
Hip Death Goddess. Yep, whatever that means.
Like Grim Reaper.
Yeah, remind me of a 60s song back in San Francisco or something. Haight Ashbury type thing. So with no further ado, I want to thank Dolly for just being with me. And being who she is, and I want to just dedicate the next song to her, to Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass song. And we hope it's an experiment, so we're hoping that it actually plays, because the last song I tried to put in the computer didn't. So let's see if it plays, Dolly. If you're listening, I love you. This goes out to you. I hope.
You see, this guy's in love with you. Yes, I'm in love. Who looks at you the way I do? When you smile, I can tell we know. Can I show you? I'm glad I got to know you, 'cause I've heard some talk. They say you think I'm fine. Yes, I'm in love. And what I do to make you mine, tell me now, is it so? Don't let me be the last to know. My hands are shaking, let my heart.
Don't let me be the last to know.
know my hand to shake.
of an eye. Double life. There ain't no limitation. Time's a waste.
There's still argument about whether it is poetry or not.
Yo, I communicate to captivate and capture raps greatly. The latest tease in many be conceived with the genesis. Now the minute we enter, things are dead and incidentally. I guess because the penalty for whack shit ain't ignored. So all aboard the total test, temptation and your fascination of socially being compromised to me for a duration of rhyme time to tantalize your mind to fantasize the things I dream come true so dope fiends can come through to peep the shit I do. I'm on some casual mellow shit. My aura gets electrified by my amplified vibe, then emotion takes over. I've been addicted to the mic since like 85, and that's no lie. Ain't no lies. Knowledge is born, nigga. Recognize paragraphs, blast. Verbal outcast, my eyes flash of dollar signs. Mad visions, I made decisions. Corrupt religions take position in this raw elements inquisition.
And not to mention my dimension, lyrical head trip into the segment, suspension on that shit. Hip hop's bizarre star children, lip locking, mic building. In a whirlwind of this and that combined, now El Ronnie got a brand new brag rap to tag up. Lyrical graffiti, bombing trains of thought to smack up. Brainwaves like railways, no cry long. But what else say? Hell they better recognize the avant-garde. My part is for the beast. My crew be West Beast. Deceased to tense release because the beast is always keeping.
More elements hit you off just like tip phones. My click's known. Double life rhymes thrown. Minds blown. The crime zone. My sentiments rise to the top just like a sediment. If it pops a residence, y'all niggas is the tenements. I try to stay cool and keep my temperament. Rhymes set the precedence. Leaving evidence for my intelligence to benefit. The Royal crew, whom I hold reverence. Mental experiments developing. My ill testament.
Then L skill match with the baddest around your axis. It's no limitation. I take this mic to the acid test.
That's it.
Yes, I manifest the quest to gesture. Form the test is on the land. The strongest minds are strong. Long live the living tightless. They gleam like my nose ring. Let the mic bust. I'm hosting the approaching of a whole new toasting to come to motivate the feeble one.
No question, roll up the line, I'm a blessed one. This versatile child, double lifestyle, the vexed one. Collaboration, all my talent and motivation. Valley like a prince when my eyes blink, my mind's racing. Time's a wasting, mental activation, fuck the segregation. East and west, same blood relation.
Then fingers fold, tingling old sensation, touching mics, cold steel. A bold feel of the cold chill, cause niggas cold steel. I come to post, willpower, shower, verbal rain. Holler about my herbal gains and maintain my focus, react. Approach it to L, the hope of the well. First, Dogon descent, a bent mission since birth in the church of the poison mind, and still I rise, baptized in rap vibes to enshrine the double life.
Diagram of destiny, vocal chemistry got the best of me, blessing me. Minds round with fine clouds of ecstasy, your exercise mind, signify family ties, cause niggas be dropping dimes in my life, be on the line, mental movements, double life project, we move shit, dome improvements, but join the fake and move tip, my crew flips, with two clips filled with intuition for ammunition, rhymes stay online like in a decision. Don't get mistook it. My living crooked out in Brooklyn. For central booking, be calling. Bagging for balling. I try to keep moving, but time is stalling. Close my eyes, feel my mind dying. Now I'm falling. 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 Falling.
In him is the restlessness of the seeker, the questioner, the explorer of far horizons. The hunger that is never satisfied. In him also is the tough strength that has never been fully met, never unleashed. The resilience of youthfulness which wells from within and which no aging can destroy. Besides, I love him.
Oh, say something, Hans.
Say it, anything.
That was a pretty good music there.
Who is that? Yeah, that was Sevenfold. No, it was called, it's a band called Avenged Sevenfold. That song was called The Stage Dollies, the one that turned me on to that last week.
Pretty interesting video if you saw it.
Yeah, all puppets or marionettes and stuff. That is pretty kind of weird. One thing I forgot to do, Hans, I said I promised Primal Jimal I was going to play some couple of songs at 8:15 and spaced it out because of the trying to fix shit going wrong in the studio.
Yep. If it's not something, it's something else.
No, they said
excuses, excuses.
I know, excuses are meaningless.
We should write a book of excuses. I think it'd be a bestseller.
Yeah, if it's not one thing, it's another. No, they say it's one thing after another. Anyway, I do have a couple of songs by the Primal Jimal Band coming up next I want to play. And I want to mention that the soundboard this guy has is from the Grand Ole Opry. Over 880 bands have used this soundboard. Santana, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Jay Giles. It's 15 feet long, 5 feet wide, 4 feet high, and weighs over a ton. And this is the soundboard this guy's got for the Sound Current Sound Studios. Thank God. And blessings to Ira for fixing that place, getting it going, and may with God's grace get it finished so that people can start using that. And it's beautiful, beautiful acreage out here in the middle of a, like, you know, nice wilderness area. 10 acres of nothing.
Can't wait to take the tour.
Yeah, I can't wait to go to the grand opening party. Anyway, we're going to... This song, the band we're hearing right now, the Primal Jimal Band, wasn't recorded on that board. It was recorded somewhere around here locally in Santa Cruz. But from now on, anything...
To the highest of standards.
Yeah, anything else recorded around down nearby him is going to be on the soundboard that was at the Grand Ole Opry. And it was also used at the TV show and radio show at the same time. Giant board. And David Grohl brags about his. And it's like, you know, not the same size as Jimal's. His board's small compared to Jimal's board.
Ooh, Jimal's.
And he did a whole video on it, you know? Like, oh, look at my soundboard.
Well, Grohl. He's got the most original person.
I got albums in the studio right here that were recorded on that soundboard.
Yeah, I'm sure I do, too.
Yeah, many.
I passed on bringing my Dolly Parton, but that could have been one.
I got Jake Giles. They might have a Santana here, but they all recorded on there. Lots of stuff, you know. Earth, Wind, and Fire. I got a lot of studios. Got a lot of that stuff. Anyway, I want to stop talking about it. Yeah, Jim, if you're out there, we love you. I apologize for being a little late on the music play here. We're just kind of confused here. We get loopy.
Well, if you've been listening, you're no stranger to the Primal Jimal Show and the Idle Hands Show.
Yeah. So anyway, we're going to hear a couple songs, two in a row, possibly three, but at least they're on CD1, which is in stereo, thank God.
On with you. On with Squeaks. On with a squeak.
Another heartache. Another hole in my head. Oh, no. Looking for love, who is it lonesome as a lonesome dove?
mics. Turn up the mics. 1, 2, 3. Idle Hand Show. 101.2. No, 101.3 Freak Radio.
Triple shot of the Primal Jimal there.
Yeah. Hopefully that sound studio sound current's well on its way. Well, Hans, I've been looking at the computer here, and I hit streaming listeners, and this little gray box number popped up, and since we've been looking at it, the number's getting bigger and bigger.
It's not ticking, is it?
No, it's not going backwards, down and down. It's getting higher and higher, man. It says 211. I think that means that we got 211 listeners, Hans?
Streaming listeners?
Yeah.
Maybe. That's a lot.
It's a lot to me, man. I was lucky we had 11.
Yeah.
Well, if you're out there, and we're not kidding ourselves, and this is the how many listeners we have, and it's not a bomb. Because it's not going, but the thing is, it never goes down from 211 down, you know, it always goes up, up, up. Anyway, I figure if there's 211 people listening, Hans, I bet you there's some of them that aren't alone, so like, give us a cool 250.
Wow. You have to round that up to like 1,000, I'd say.
Nah.
Yeah, 1,000.
Well, if you're up there, and we're not kidding ourselves, and this little thing here that says 211 means we have listeners, 211 listeners out of 7 billion, call your friends up and tell them to tune in now, and we'll see this thing. If it moves up, we'll know that's what it is.
9, that's FCC violations.
Oh, that's how many codes we're fucking up, huh?
Yeah.
No, I just said fuck. It didn't go up.
Oh, that's true. Huh? Shit, fuck.
Who knows what this thing is? Anyway... Yeah, God knows. I hope it's the actual listeners we have. They're trying to tell us here, you know, this is how you find out the listeners, kid.
Well,
let's
dedicate this next song to our listeners.
Okay, well, which one you want to do?
The record.
The record. Okay.
The record. All
right, so who's on this record now?
And to our fellow DJs.
Hey, who's on this record, Hans?
Oh, we got Jimmy Page is helping out on this one.
Closer to the mic.
Jimmy Page.
There you go.
That's what I said.
I know, but I didn't see your damn bubbles pop up.
Don't you have bubbles? Merlin, I'm not
a fish.
Well,
I mean, but it's not Led Zeppelin. Come on, tell them about the record.
Oh, it's, I wanted them to hear it.
Okay, we don't have to tell you about the record. We'll let you hear it. And I hope you guys enjoy it. It's dedicated to all the listeners and to everybody that the collective at freakradio.org. We love you. Thank you for listening. If there are 211 of you, or whatever the hell that number means.
Is it still at 211?
Yep.
You think it would have dropped just recently?
Maybe they love us. Who knows?
Play.
Stand up and walk out on me. Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do you know? All I need is my brother. I say I'm gonna get high. I don't say it no more. someone to love. And it happens all the time, yeah.
What do you see when you turn out the light?
I can't tell you, but it sure feels like mine. Don't you know I'm gonna make it with my friends? I promise myself I can die. Said I'm gonna try it with.
So coming down the pike at you is Bathrob Spears Broadsides, the Thursday edition. I'm Robert Norris. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. At least my recorded voice will. This is pre-recorded, so you can't call in, but you can call me later, or actually during the show, and I will later pick up your calls, or maybe I'll pick them up when you call. I never can tell. 831-423-4833, or for the locals, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. H-U-F-F, which is 423-4833. You can call in with comments on the show. If you're interested in free radio itself and becoming a broadcaster, I'm one of that collective. If you have some news reports you want to pass on to me, if you have some criticisms, things you think should have been included but weren't, 423-HUFF. Call me and listen to the show if you'd like.
Appealing. I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So I'm on the line with Food Not Bombs activist, posterer, and poster boy, Cats and Jammer Keith McHenry. Hello, Keith. Well, how's it going out there? I'm sitting inside recording. You're out there, what, posting flyers?
Yeah, I'm posting flyers for the David Rovick concert. Well, he's doing the musical history tour and he'll be here at the Loudon Nelson Community Center as part of the campaign to get the bathrooms open. And that's on Wednesday, September 26th from 7 to 9. And the admission is only $10 more if you can, less if you can't. And it's a benefit for Food Not Bombs. And Rovix is like a troubadour. He's kind of a punk folk and a Billy Bragg type of kind of maybe Pete Seeger combo type musician.
Yeah, I played him frequently on the air myself here. And that's, of course, the day after the City Hall meeting and the protest to open the damn bathrooms at Loudon Nelson, and then, of course, throughout the city if we can, plus maybe get you a permit to pick up the, well, to resume your porta-potty adventures that you embarked on, what, a couple months ago?
Yes, right. We rented a portable toilet, but the city kept trying to take it from us. Eventually they did. And, they really called the portable toilet company. And first they were trying to get it just grabbed from us, but we kept moving it around. And then finally they called the whatever the toilet company was and removed it. And then the city manager, Bernal, said he would look into getting a permit for that kind of thing, because I went to Public Works and Recreation and Parks, and they don't have such a permit or anything like that. Even though the people around the downtown, post office are like, oh, there's like all this urine and feces, and they were cheering when I got the toilet. And
that's where you set it up, right, Keith, which is with initially in the town clock and then across the street at where Food Not Bombs serves every Saturday and Sunday 4 to 6.
Yes, that's where we did. We put it there.
You know, as I'm thinking that this is reminiscent of what they did with Camp Paradise when Camp Paradise back in 2001 actually tried to set up a porta potty. The police moved in and the city moved in under the Crone regime. Actually, it was the guy, the mayor right before Chris Crone, but he was on the city council and made no public protest about this that I remember. They removed it so that people had to go crap in the bushes, sort of similar to what they're doing at Loudon Nelson, where people get to pee on the grass, and they can call the Sentinel to take pictures of six, or is it eight? I've heard two different stories. Cops dragging away, or let's say leading away. I'm not sure if he was dragged. The woman who was urinating in the grass because she couldn't get into the bathroom. And since then, I've heard of at least one other person who has a protest, has actually urinated directly either at Loudon Nelson or in the city council complex, because they also keep their bathrooms closed except during council hours, while the staff sort of merrily and happily goes to its internal bathrooms. The public gets to hold its water or maybe line up across the street to get into the library if it's open and if its bathrooms are operational. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just, many, many people have trouble finding bathrooms in this town. And yet, like you say, their excuse for getting rid of Food Not Bombs was people are urinating and defecating. And then Bernal goes, well, there's a portable toilet behind Bank of the West, around the corner, but except for it's always locked because of vandalism, so you can't get in.
Now, is that still true, Keith? Are they still locking the... I know that I went by the farmer, maybe perhaps because the farmer's market was happening yesterday, and the bathroom, or I should say the porta potty next to, with a washing station, along, I guess it's Lincoln Street.
Yeah,
it was open.
Yeah, after we got the portable toilet and we did the action in front of the parks department offices, and then we met with Barnell, it seems like he has kept those unlocked. So that means that there is one behind Bank of the West that's been unlocked most of the time and since that time. And then also one,
Lincoln Street, right across from the farmer's market.
Yeah, right across from Jack's.
And you say you find that's generally open, not just on farmer's market days?
Yeah, that's generally open recently. And then also, of course, the one at Laurel in front has been open. So that's three that are open 24 hours. So that's better than it had been.
So none of those are disabled.
During the years of struggle at the post office.
None of those are disabled accessible, right?
Correct. None of them are correct. You've got that. Then the other problem is like the bathrooms in at the parking garages, you can't bring a bike in, and I frequently see people getting either ticketed for having their bicycle in the bathroom or coming out of the bathroom angry that their bike has been stolen, that they chained up on something, you know, outside the bathroom. So you see that. The whole bathroom thing is just outrageous. I mean, we've got billions of dollars in this area. It's what's the fourth most expensive housing market in the world. And yet we, and then people like use the public urination defecation as a reason to, you know, block off parks like Loudon Nelson Park, or, you know, block off this, block off that.
By block off, you mean the new iron wrought fence that's been put up around
An iron fence around the park. I'm at Loudon Nelson now, and there's a bunch of cops that are talking to homeless people. They haven't made any arrests or anything like that, but they're all gathered, and they've called homeless people over to talk to them. At least I would assume this person's homeless in that they've got quite a large amount of objects that are piled around them.
Maybe you could sneak on over, and if you want to play some of that through your phone, we can hear what they're saying.
Yeah, it looks like they've got two plainclothes cops and two uniform. No, maybe it's three uniform cops or. Yeah, whatever. I'll walk that way. Then I got to get back here to do this posting thing. But the, so there's a bunch of other things going on. The sad story is that a organization in Santa Monica that's similar to Take Back Santa Cruz, you go to their Facebook page, and it's almost a repeat of the same kind of crazy things.
What's it called?
They're called Res Democracy or something like that,
huh.
Like Resident Democracy.
Right, right.
Play on words. Oh, they're all leaving. All the cops are leaving. So the
are you driving those cops away, Keith? Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, and they get intimidated when they, you know, I'm a threat to society, as you know.
Well, maybe you could find out from the man on the street what why they stopped him, or the man in the park. Is it in the park, right?
Yeah, I will go talk to the woman in a little bit here. So anyway, in Santa Monica, they took photos of the meal.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the meal didn't. The people there had no idea. I've been urging them to get permits to get signs and stuff, banners and signs and flyers. So they would, and they'd actually won a case at one point for the right to serve food on the Third Street Promenade as a First Amendment right. But then, that organization, that chapter kind of bounced along, and it became kind of a charity, unfortunately. And then they were cooking inside of they lost the apartment. The person in whose apartment they were using moved. And so then they got a kitchen at Presbyterian Church, and then this anti-homeless group, Res Democracy, harassed the church into kicking them out, and then there's a very interesting article in the Santa Monica, I think the Daily News, on this issue, where they said that it was a coalition of the, like, downtown association, like business district group, and real estate interests. Somebody was having trouble renting a storefront on Third Street Promenade and blamed it on food bombs and the presence of homeless people. And they ended up moving into the Salvation Army to cook there and to serve there. So when they called me about this, it was kind of too late in the game, apparently, because I urged them, considering that there was a 11th Circuit Court of Appeals case that was unbelievable in Fort Lauderdale, about Fort Lauderdale food not bombs, which very strongly said that the sharing of free food and the way that Food Not Bombs is doing it was definitely a First Amendment protected form of free expression, and their ruling, like, we could not have written a better ruling if we were trying to make one ourselves. It's just was incredible. I don't know where those judges came from. That seems really unusual. Four really incredible women were the attorneys in that case. Three from Gainesville. From a Southern law foundation of some sort, I forget the name of it, but they are like were able to get a really great ruling, and that was impressive. And I forwarded that to the people at Santa Monica, but they felt like they just didn't want to put up any fight. They'd already spent a bunch of time talking to the city and agreeing to this situation inside of...
And explain again, Keith, although you have many times before, briefly, why it's important to do this visibly and publicly.
Yeah, well, the reason that we are out on the streets and we're not inside, and why that this has been an ongoing struggle for 30 years, is because we're trying to make the point that society should change so that no one has to live in the streets or eat at soup kitchens. And there's no way to communicate those ideas effectively if you aren't out on the streets doing so. And the most effective way is to share your food out on the streets, where you create a sense of community and you have diverse backgrounds of people coming by to maybe not always eat, but to just join in and hang out with people that are living on the streets or are in need of food. And that synergy and impact is much stronger message than if you just have some flyers on the street or if you're just telling people that this is the case.
Well, also, it's a visible demonstration of the reality of poverty, and it really puts, you know, concrete pressure on city officials, particularly if business people don't like the idea that, gee, this looks like a slum. We got all these poor people here. This is the, you know, get rid of them. And of course, it also puts pressure on the poor people and on Food Not Bombs.
Yeah, well, yeah, it does. The idea is that you come across a Food Not Bombs meal, you see the signs that say Food Not Bombs, you see a lot of people gathering. Obviously, there's something wrong if that many people come to get a free meal that citizens themselves are putting together at no cost to the government. And so hopefully encourages people to have an emotional reaction to say, look, we should be spending our money on things like housing, education, and social services and not spending it, you know, like half of our federal income taxes on the military.
It's a nice idea,
that's
Keith.
The point
but
of it.
What has been the impact, do you think, on government policy? I mean, if you talk to somebody like, you know, numerous philosophers on the left will tell you things have just gotten worse, not better. What do you say to that? The response, it hasn't worked there, McHenry. You lose. Try something else.
Well, there's certainly some truth to that, that the society has gone much worse. And, you know, look at where, you know, there's all kinds of talk now of a wider war in the Middle East, but, you know, the Trump administration and the U.S. has just been accused of using phosphorus bombs in Syria and talking about the idea of trying to blame it on Assad so they can fight Russia and Iran and the Syrian government. You know, like, because there's money in it. You know, the weapons industry likes that. The Democrats like that. The Republicans like that. Also, like, you know, gets everyone looking over there instead of at the fact that, you know, like over 40% of America is one paycheck away from the streets or they're already on the streets. And, you know, that things are just completely falling apart while the rich are getting richer. So, yeah, it's true. It's kind of, it's crazy. But the thing is that, you know, I'm very optimistic all the time, maybe irrationally so. But the fact that there's new Food Not Bombs groups starting all the time, the more and more people are volunteering, more and more people are coming, you know, participating and getting the idea that this is wrong, that hopefully at some point things will gel. There'll be like one too many attacks on working and poor people, and people will come to Food Not Bombs and to communicate with one another and figure out what to do.
As you may know, Chris Hedges has suggested that what's likely to happen is there'll be another crash and the world will go off the dollar standard. And as a consequence, the U.S. empire, like other empires before it, will start to shrink precipitously, like the British Empire, like the Roman Empire, like the Russian Soviet Empire. Like the Austro-Hungarian Empire, he was citing all these and something I was watching this morning.
Yeah, I agree. I think that that's where we're at. I think there's some evidence that it'll be somewhat similar, like the Roman Empire. And one of the first major recorded famines in world history was during the collapse of the Roman Empire, and towards the very, very end.
What's been the impact in Santa Cruz? I mean, that if you look, you've been here now since 2013, more or less 2014. You came and went a bit, but then you came and stayed.
It's actually a little bit more than that. I think I came here.
I mean, you did come way back in 1988, but only briefly. You know, you kind of
2012, I think.
Was it? Okay.
Weird.
But I mean, if you compare that with 2018, things gotten better, worse regarding the way the city responds, the way city officials respond to the presence of poor people outside, to the they've let Food Not Bombs survive mainly because Food Not Bombs continues to, you know, show a lot of volunteer muscle, I think. But
yeah, we have like a ton of support, and so like there was an attempt by anti-homeless activists like Janet Fardette and them to get rid of us through a petition campaign, and it totally fizzled, and our counter petition campaign was like massively.
Well, you were at the last city council meeting. I saw you there. That was actually 2 days ago, when there were two big issues that came up. One was some called a phony rent control diversion measure intended to move people away from Measure M coming up in the election in November,
yeah.
And the other was the, you know, the libraries being dumped, or should we say shoveled under the parking structure, with the current library being used, I don't know, for what, as an annex for Martine Bernal? Hard to say what's going to happen.
That's what we've heard from city officials.
What's your feeling about that? I mean, and you've been at council member council meetings before that. You know, you went to council members. They actually roped off the area to keep you and Food Not Bombs away. They arrested one of the Food Not Bombs activists, Abby Samuels. Or they told you and her to leave the room at different points. Has that changed? Well, I guess if we're looking at yesterday, actually, I wanted to know is what was the day before yesterday's. Give us a little report from the city council how that went in terms of.
I have turned my stomach because, for instance. You know, the positive thing is that they decided not to vote. Well, they put off this attack on Measure M till closer to the election. That could be a terrible thing, because if they do vote for this alternative to M, which is rent control, then I think it will confuse the you know, people voting that are up on what's going on. And what is at least $500,000 have been spent by outside interests on trying to defeat rent control in Santa Cruz. And what it really showed is that the developers and people that are making money in this town have no regard for the renters, the poor people, the working class people, the history of the place. They're just out for themselves. And and of course the city council is pretty much the same thing. You know, Chris Cohen and Sandy Brown would be the exceptions, that they're hated by the developer class, but they don't have that much power to the developer class, and you know, and the rest of the council are totally lockstep with any anti-homeless project that goes on. I went to like all these library meetings about the library garage, and no, everybody spoke out against it except for the actual corporation that was going to make the money building it. And it shows that there's actually no democracy, and that something has to. It was the big message I got from everything that happened on last Tuesday's city council is that somehow the city councilors have to be made so uncomfortable, and the developers so uncomfortable, that they actually are motivated to start to respect people's rights in this town.
Well, I think we saw one person.
We
saw one person arrested, right, for this. I mean, she was, I guess, Nora Hockman, who's a labor organizer, was you know, denouncing the developers, or she was denouncing someone. I wasn't in the room. I got secondhand reports. And so they, Crone urged that she be arrested, I hear, in order to keep the meeting going. This is what I got as a second-hand account from somebody else who was there. And then instead, Terrazas recessed the meeting. And then when she tried to get back in, they did arrest her, and they took her to jail, and they held her overnight. Do you have any more news, or and
is that any news about that? But I heard she was handcuffed or what? At some part, kind of nicked her arm, and she kind of was slightly injured, but not seriously. But the thing is that I think even storming city council and shutting it down day in and day out. Of course, we're going to be perceived as being undemocratic in the five people if we do that, because they don't get that the whole thing until you get involved in it is completely undemocratic, that they're bought off several years ago,
you know, DSAL was the big council cash cow that they wanted to float or spend, I should say, and the threat of an initiative or perhaps a referendum stopped that. Similarly, at the county level, the attempt to crush marijuana cultivation and impose very restrictive rules, though now it looks like they're doing that anyway, was stopped 2 years ago or 2 or 3 years ago by an initiative petition, or actually a referendum petition that seemed to have enough votes that they quickly backed down. Could that be done in the matter of the library, since the library issue was voted in, buried alive?
I'd hope. I mean, actually, the people that organized the desalination campaign, hopefully they would get, they seem to really know what they're doing in that, in initiative issues, and hopefully they will see that that's important to do.
Well, I
think in the broader thing, there has to be, I mean, maybe there's just plain not enough people that are conscious of what's going on in Santa Cruz to be a critical mass.
Speaking of what we were talking about like 15 minutes ago, when you notice some police surrounding or approaching or chatting with this homeless woman, you said, or apparently woman with a lot of property who might well be homeless.
Correct, yeah. Do
you get any clue as to how that eventually turned out?
Well, she's just back sitting on her blanket, and all the other people are just hanging around, and all the cops just left. So I don't know what that was about.
But she wasn't able to get the police to force open the bathroom inside Loudon Nelson.
No, well, I don't know if she was trying to do that. There actually, oddly enough, is two portable toilets outside here.
Really?
So look and see if they're...
Are they open?
Open. But...
I think I saw those. They're along the...
They're locked. Both of them are locked.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
One is... Yeah, they're both definitely locked.
Huh.
Oh, they're for some other kind of
well,
thing.
I'm going to leave it there and give you the last word, Keith. Anything you want to, any messages, announcements, flashes?
Well, the big thing that, is, I've had like a lot of conversations with environmental health officials in the state of California, and I've once again had more conversations with this office of Monique Lamon, who introduced the legislation to have a way of making environmental health permit easier for groups to get to feed the homeless. And in each of these conversations, it's become clear that it's actually going to make it more difficult. It's on the governor's desk, or I think technically it's not on his desk, but that he is likely to, he has to either, you can just let it slide and it'll become law on, or he can veto it. And if he vetoes it, we have to get him to veto it by the 30th of September.
Hmm.
I had gotten misinformation, that it would be a pocket veto if he didn't, sign it, but that's not true according to Lamone's office. That if he doesn't sign it or veto it, it still becomes law.
Has he vetoed anything in this year that you know of?
I have no idea. I don't really care much about state politics usually. And then in this particular case, my reason for engaging in Lamone's office another time and ending up in an hour conversation with another aide of hers, is find out when it would take effect. And so on January 1st, 2019 is when everybody that feeds the hungry outside is supposed to go, and they call it a registration. You got to give all this information to your local environmental health department and give them whatever the fee is that they have determined is appropriate for your county. And then you have to find a commercial kitchen to cook in. It doesn't have to be a commercial kitchen that the, see, this is what's supposed to be the liberalness of it, is a commercial kitchen that isn't actually already inspected by environmental health, but can be inspected by environmental health, and it wouldn't necessarily get the traditional environmental health permit for that kitchen, but it has to be a commercial kitchen that could be certified by local environmental health.
And explain what a commercial kitchen is.
A commercial kitchen would be like a kitchen in a restaurant or a kitchen in a church, Rod Nelson's kitchen, for example, something like that. Could be, but not an apartment, not outside in a park, not in a house, not in a backyard. Those are not considered lawful places to prepare these meals.
Now, you've been getting food, you've been preparing food at India Joe's, but that is about to disappear, right?
Correct, yeah. We have been told that within 12 months, India Joe's will be bulldozed. So we have tried desperately to find a kitchen in this town. Not so much to comply with some kind of health regulations, but just because the volume of food we're cooking, it'd be a lot easier to have a larger space than India Joe's. And so this is where it's kind of a crisis, and even if this law didn't exist. But the problem is that there's 50 Food Not Bombs chapters and many other churches and random humans that are preparing meals and sharing them with the hungry on the street. And if this law starts to be enforced, and which is likely in towns where they're trying to get rid of the homeless and trying to get rid of people feeding the homeless, then that will mean that the nearly 50 Food Not Bombs chapters and others will be in a situation of having to resist this. So Food Not Bombs itself has had the position for decades, since 1992 when we officially adopted this idea, that fruitarian free food is just an unregulated act of gift of compassion, and that the government has no business, regulating what we're doing.
Keith, I'm going to have to. Wind it up if you can, Keith. I got to move on. But go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, we're organizing around that, and we really hope that people call Governor Brown's office to ask him to veto this bill.
And how can they do that?
I don't have his phone number with me. I'm walking around out.
Okay. Well, it shouldn't be that hard to find if you go online, I guess, to all you listeners out there. And we've been talking with...
This is Keith McHenry, one of the co-founders of Food Not Bombs. And you can reach me at foodnotbombs.net.
Thank you.
And then Rod Nelson is moving some people who are laying in the circle away because they're laying in the circle. Well, they're not allowed to lay down. They can sit, but they can't lay down.
You can't lay down in the park and during the day?
No, this is like there's a round little circle with a little logo in the middle of it near the back door of the senior meal.
Oh, I see.
And they apparently made people yelled outside, and they were told they had to sit up. They weren't allowed to lay down.
You can rest, but not too comfortably. We don't want them hanging around. I think I can understand that. All right,
I better go, yeah.
Hey, if you have more developments, let me know.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. And that was Keith McHenry, as you heard him say.
Never a bathroom to sneeze in. I know Leo Tenzi, yeah.
That was about half of I Predict a Riot, which is a number by the Kaiser Chiefs. Not as intelligible as I'd hoped, but it's got some punch, and it seemed to have some promise when I listened to a part of it, but not as much as I'd hoped. You're tuned to Free Radio if you just tuned in, or just because I feel like saying so, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org on your computer, and 423-4833, not a call-in number, but a number for contact in case you want to get in touch with something you've heard, have some questions, want to be involved in homeless civil rights struggles, 423-4833. And now I'm going to try to reach another activist, Brent Adams, who's been working hard at reopening a winter warming center that he's got, not winter shelter. There's a real difference. And also on his day and night storage program. He's got some strong ideas about what's been going on around town, as you regular listeners know. Let's see if we can reach him. So we're ringing him now. We'll see if he's available.
Warming Center program.
No, doesn't sound like it.
Warming Center program is closed for the season, but we are offering the day and night storage program, opening between 7 and 9 in the morning and 5 to 7 p.m. at night over by the Warrior Stadium behind Wheelworks, a little parking lot back there by the levee. Look for the white shuttle van. We'll be able to store your blankets, bedding, and other personal belongings. You'll sign a basic contract. It's all going to be good, and we're happy to help you. If you need shelter, do call the Homeless Services Center at 458-6020.
And I won't go too much further with that, since the Homeless Lack of Services Center doesn't provide shelter. It provides a waiting list if you want to meet the qualifications of the pathway to housing for the Paul Lee Loft, or the Page Smith Community House, or the Family Rebelly Family Shelter. Or you can also sign up for the River Street Mini Shelter. And if you're on the River Street Mini Shelter list, you theoretically on the Paul Lee Loft list, but I heard that it's not so easy to get onto that list, or not even sure it's being done these days. If you get a sleeping ticket or a camping ticket, and you're actually on the list on the night that you get the ticket, the night they wake you up, hassle you, ID you, tell you to move along, and then write you up a $200 ticket, that ticket will be dismissed short of court. That's the claim of the city. And again, it's hard to document. People continue to get camping tickets. People continue to be forced to go to court. Not necessarily, though, those who signed up for the River Street Mini Shelter list. For those who are interested, the number to call is 459-6644. In fact, I think I'm going to call that number right now just to see if they are available. Let's see if they're available. Give them a call. Hey, Tia, is it still you doing the business of signing up folks who can then get camping tickets dismissed if they're on your waiting list?
Yeah, we are still doing that.
Sounds good. And is there any requirement to, I don't know, call back every 3 days or something to that effect? Right. You send the district attorney a list. And, I mean, do you have to keep calling to stay on the list, or do you people stay on the list if they've called once?
Right now, our waiting list is closed.
The waiting list is closed. How many community beds do you have? Apparently you have more mental health beds because of this new contract. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
how many beds do you have for the community when they're available? And how many did you have before this contract with the county? So you have it, but you don't want to say what it is, correct?
Well, I'm saying that I'm not going to provide that information.
Do you have to call back if you happen to be on the waiting list? Gotcha. That was my question. No, you answered it. You're good.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, it's peculiar you don't want to tell me, you know, how many beds there were before and how many there are now. I don't know why that's top secret information. You know the answer, but you want her to answer it. You think Tracy will actually call me back? Tell her I called and asked. I mean, if she doesn't answer, then you're making a choice not to do it as well. That's your choice. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, I just feel like I want to make sure that
it can't be confidential. It's a public record. Well, I don't want you to get fired. That's not my interest either. I want you to understand that. Do you want to say how long the wait list is? No, I understand. But I mean, is it like 50, 100, 5? Is it a big number? I mean... Okay. I appreciate that. Sometime I would like to call you for an interview. You're not being interviewed for on-the-air stuff right now, except I'm conveying your information onto the air, but I'm not expecting you to, you know, I need your permission to interview you on the air over the phone, and I'm not doing that right now, so. No, I understand. These are approximate information you're giving. By the way, we hope you'll be a speaker at the rally on the 25th, if you feel like it.
Yeah, well, I don't know about being a speaker, but I'm aware of the rally.
Well, you're an expert in public health, you know. I think, you know, your information will be important, so.
Okay. All right.
Well, let me let you get back to what you're doing.
Okay, all right. I'll talk to you later, Robert.
Sounds good. Bye-bye. And I want to be cautious about, you know, conversations on the air. You can do it, but it's technically illegal unless you are getting, you know, clear consent from both sides, which I do, you know, but I'm also interested in getting the information, and if I can't get the consent, you know, at least I'll get the information. So we've actually learned some new information there, which is quite interesting. So... It looks like River Street Shelter doesn't have a waiting list. There is no waiting list except for the very few people. And there are only 3 beds available. And I don't know if that means they're available. I actually didn't clarify this tonight, which I don't think they are, unless they're the emergency beds kept open for some sort of hospital use. But if they've closed the waiting list, I think that means there's no beds available. I think that probably is the message. So that means that no one can really use this River Street phone call away flyer that I made up back in October of 2015 to protect yourself from nighttime sleeping tickets. You're supposed to call 459-6644, and you don't need to do it every 3 days. You need to do it every week if you happen to already be on the list, which she wouldn't tell me or couldn't tell me how many people currently are on the list. Because she had to check with the boss, Tracy, first, which I think is ridiculous. And I mean, maybe, you know, maybe her job is in peril. In which case, I still think public needs to demand that information. And if people are refusing it, they're doing a disservice. But on the other hand, well, as you heard me say, I was inviting this person to come and join the protest to reopen bathrooms, which I think a lot of people, even social service bureaucrats, I don't know if I would call her a bureaucrat, sounds like I actually should, because that's how she was being, are, you know, in favor of reopening bathrooms. I mean, it makes no sense to close them other than pleasing the hardened little hearts of Take Back Santa Cruz-minded, Santa Cruz neighborish type people who aren't very neighborly at all. I was at one of their rallies, candidate forums, actually, last night. So let's take another musical break, and then I'll be back with whatever else I can conjure up here. That was a segment from Bodine's Closer to Free, and again, available on YouTube, so go check it out if you'd like. So I'm hoping to do a more detailed and settled understanding of what I felt came out of, or didn't come out of, the Santa Cruz Shitty Council meeting of last Tuesday. And that's maybe stuff we can do on the Sunday show. It may or may not come together for me then. But I'm going to play a few brief clips. There was an incident. Well, there was a lot of opposition in the afternoon to the proposed so-called rent relocation relief that the city council was supposedly providing in the event that Measure M fails. They didn't propose extending the rent freeze and the just eviction protection ordinance that they created back in February. No, they proposed rather funding for by the city for relocation if there was dislocation by tenants. And I think it had to do with also there was an issue about, though this was not yet on the agenda, it was only relocation assistance, I think, although again I've got to look at it more carefully. It's bruited about that there was also a sort of a pseudo rent ceiling proposed. So looking at the staff report, the back in June, the so-called City Council's Housing Blueprint Subcommittee recommended and the council approved the recommendations to direct staff to conduct community outreach and return in August and September with a draft city ordinance stipulating that a rent increase of more than 10% in 1 year or more than 15% in any two consecutive years will trigger relocation assistance for tenants should they choose to leave their home rather than accept the rent increase above the set threshold. Such ordinance will be set to go into effect only if the November 2018 rent control and just cause eviction ballot measure does not meet the required vote for passage and review it in a year considering fluctuations in the consumer price index. Now, activists in favor of M suggested this was an attempt to deter people from voting for Measure M, because they're saying, well, you may have your doubts about M, but see, there's going to be rent control anyway. But the amount of rent control means that they can raise rent a total of 40% in 5 years. I don't know if that is affordable for anybody who are in the medium income range. I guess it might be. But it's not much in the way of rent control, and there's nothing about just eviction protection. But it seems to be an attempt to, in the eyes of the Measure M people, an attempt to get people to say, if you have any doubts about it, well, you'll be getting rent control of a kind anyway. So what the M people suggested was postponing this, and they actually got the postponement, although there was some really angry response, which I did not witness, and I'm kind of waiting to see it posted online. Maybe it's posted somewhere else, but the city's version has not yet been posted online. You go to their website and you see the agenda, but you don't see any of the video yet, which may mean they're slow or may mean they're, I don't know, there's some other motivation. But I suspect it may just be the usual slowness that's going on. So I came to the city council meeting mainly to support the combination of bathroom restoration, but also the hoax around the shelter situation where they're claiming they're having some kind of shelter for winter, but there is no winter shelter program. There's simply an expansion of programs with waiting lists that allow a few more people in if they sign up for the program and meet the requirements. I've talked about this in past shows, and it's something activist Brent Adams was very upset about, and properly so. Also, there is, of course, the recent issue of the Boise versus, the Boise decision, let's call it. I guess Martin versus Boise, where the federal courts that now oversee our city and California, in fact, 9 states in the West, ruled you can't arrest people, cite people, criminalize people for sleeping at night, camping, sitting, lying, resting, if there's no place for them to do it, if there's no available shelter. And that may actually be significant in suggesting that there's no, that this may be the fall of the downtown ordinances that so severely restrict people's ability to rest, although it may be, say, well, it's just time, place, and manner. They can all fit onto benches, or they can move to a park or something like that. That can be the claim, I guess. But if it's required that there be shelters for people to go to for them to rest, we ain't got them. So that'd be an interesting provision. Anyway, I came to talk about those issues. I prepared a 4-minute speech, though I wanted it to be 5 minutes, as previous mayors have allowed prior to the right-wing administrations of Terrazas and Matthews and a couple of previous mayors. You see, you get 3 minutes of an ordinary speaker, an individual speaker, 5 minutes as a group. That's been changed to 4 and 2 or less, depending on the scheduling preferences and wishes of the mayor. And I think every time that happens, Crone and Brown or any member of the council should object and say, no, there are people waiting here. I move that we allow every speaker his 3 minutes or her 3 minutes, or at least the 2 minutes, but That just hasn't generally been done. I think Crone may have done it once or twice, and Brown may have done it. It should be done on a regular basis. But these two so-called liberal members apparently don't think it's an important enough issue, as well as a number of other issues that I think have resulted in the erosion of what semblance of democratic rights. It isn't even the reality, it's the semblance, so maybe we shouldn't be so concerned, has happened. Anyway, because I was coming to talk at the 5:30 oral communications period, which is actually ended up happening at 6:15, thank you, David Terrazas, what they had was a large number of people giving lengthy public testimony for and against this proposed renter relocation assistance proposal that eventually was postponed until a meeting a couple months down the road. You heard Keith McHenry refer to it briefly. Actually, I guess it's a month down the road. And I walked into the council chamber after apparently everybody had been, a number of people, the council had been cleared of people other than a line of speakers. The public was not being allowed in except suddenly only four at a time. First I thought, well, maybe it's very full, but it wasn't very full. There was virtually nobody in the chambers. So I came in with my recorder on, which I usually do. It's a public meeting. They're required to allow you to record, you would think. And you're going to hear what happened, which is the first time this has happened in a number of years at the council, what happened to me. And then you're going to hear some discussion from folks around this relocation proposal by the city, which I think may well be accurately dismissed as an anti-M measure that's designed to discourage people from voting for M and encourage people to allow landlords and real estate companies and their backers on city council to proceed full steam ahead with a kind of paper cover, so to speak. So initially, I'm standing in the back of the room. I just entered the room, and you can hear the speaker speaking.
To be subverting the I really hope that you'll think about what that means. To me, someone said cynical before, and to me, I have to use the word corrupt. It seems like there's a corruption of the democratic process. There's hundreds of thousands of dollars flowing in. The apartment association is speaking here against Measure M and for this ordinance. That should tell you. And 11,000 people signed a petition saying that they wanted Measure M to be on the ballot. Let the voters decide. Extend the rent freeze if you really care about renters.
I'd like just to make a pause. Councilmember Norris left a recording device at the front.
So he calls me Councilmember Norris again. I'm not, of course, a council member. I don't know why he does this. I think he did it again later in the same session. He did so in a previous session. This is the mayor talking, David Terrazas. But what he's saying to me is I had placed my recorder, as I usually do, near the dais so that it could get not only the kind of official version of what happens in terms of, because there is an audio that the city does, but you need to have your own version in the event that the equipment fails, in the event that they stop the audio because there's the so-called disruption, or because they choose to. And what they ask you to do is they ask you to place your audio device off to a special area off to the side, which is along the right side of the wall as you face the city council people. And some people have devices that allow them to connect electronically to the system, which, as I said, can be helpful if the system is working and if you're willing to go with whatever when they allow the system to be on, because the mayor can turn it off when he wants. But for me, for a couple of reasons, that's one option. You can put it there and plug it into the system, or put it there and just leave it on and hope that you'll catch speakers who are speaking into the microphone may not be speaking as loudly, or whatever. Or you can follow the rule, and this is the rule that was created 20 years ago, which is that you cannot leave an unattended recorder in the room. You have to sit by the recorder, and you can do that anywhere in the room, but you have to, or stand by it, sit by it, lie by it, kneel by it, whatever. And this was done after we were confronting a very repressive mayor around homeless issues, but supposedly very liberal, and ironically the only green mayor the city has ever had, or Green Party mayor, I should say. That's Tim Fitzmaurice, who's still around but hasn't been in politics for some time, at least not directly. He hasn't run for anything. Ironically, he became more liberal as time went on, maybe just by contrast with the rest of the city council. But in late 2000, early 2001, Fitzmaurice, when we were doing a so-called coffee klatch in his office, that is to say, we would go to the city council offices, invite people to have coffee right outside in the corridor, in the courtyard area, and then invite them to come and ask the mayor to open up winter shelter or to suspend the sleeping ban. That was our concern for the winter 2000-2001. I think one person had already died. Actually, a number of people that year had died, some reportedly from exposure. I'm not sure if it was that year or another year when the actual official ruling was exposure. And we did this on a sort of a continuous basis. We would always have one person in there with a sign and some literature, sitting in one of the chairs, trying to ask council members who came in if they would talk to us, which you're allowed to do. I mean, it's your government. Well, Mayor Fitzmaurice didn't like this, so he sued us. He went to court to get an injunction. He got one that was eventually dissolved, but caused us a lot of time and effort fighting it, and also repressed our ability, and I think intimidated some folks in the community, but not as much as might have been. In any case, he also promulgated a series of decorum rules, which one of them said you can't record at city council if you leave your recorder there, because... Well, it's hard to say what his motivation was. Fitzmaurice has never been specifically clear about it. But it seemed, since I would come up, was one of the few people who would leave my recorder near the microphone, and then I would go back and look at the agenda, or I'd go outside and talk to people, or I'd use the bathroom. That's no longer legal. At least, let's put it this way. It's legal. In fact, it's quite legal. But it violates their so-called decorum rules. Now, I was arrested once for doing this, not by Fitzmaurice, because I sort of ignored it when he was around. At that time, there was a lawsuit soon pending against the entire city council for having me arrested for making a mock Nazi salute. They never actually charged me or prosecuted me for that because it was ridiculous. It was a clear... a non-disruptive expression of opinion that they didn't like. Similarly, this business of restricting recording was done, I think, primarily, frankly, as a personal response to what I was doing in terms of homeless activism, bringing people to city council, trying to make them uncomfortable with their failure to address homeless issues. Actually, it was 30 years ago, or so when I began doing public outreach on homeless issues. So for years, I would continue to put my recorder up there, and people would, the existing mayor would ignore this so-called decorum rules. However, Mayor Lynn Robinson, about 4 or 5 years ago, decided to make an example of me and had me arrested for it after first instructing me to move it. I didn't do it. They had a cop take it. I went and put up a second recorder up there. The cop came and took that. I reached for my third recorder. These were tape recorders in those days. And this time she had me arrested. I was removed from the chambers. I was taken out. I went with the officer. I didn't resist. But, I had a right to be there. It was a false arrest. And I requested that the mayor... I said, what are you charging me with? And they said, disruption of a public meeting. And I said, oh, because I simply placed a recorder there. I don't think so. That's not going to be prosecuted, and that's not going to fly. And also, it's false information. I want you to take a citizen's arrest. Since the mayor made a citizen's arrest, the police didn't arrest me on their own basis. They didn't think, he's disrupting the meeting. But the mayor made a citizen's arrest. So I said, I'm making a citizen's arrest of the mayor, which is for specifically making a false police report and claiming that I'm engaging in a disruption when all I'm doing is putting a recorder there. Now, it's a violation of the council rules, but courts have ruled that a violation of rules is not a disruption unless it actually disrupts. And if they disrupt their own meeting, that's something they do and that I don't do. And it's particularly egregious when you have a reporter, and I'm a reporter, who's trying to, and particularly a critic of the city council, usually, with some exceptions, but usually, who's trying to get information out to the public, and as a member of the public has a right to be there. So you're now going to hear David Terrazas telling me that I have to move my recorder over to the side, or else... here's how that went down. Eventually what happened was the woman who came with me from the Conscience in Action group, or Conscience in Action was Ursula. She spoke very eloquently at City Council a couple of times on the issues of the bathrooms. She kind of hustled up there and, not wanting to see me arrested, agreed to stand there by the recorder throughout the meeting. I didn't like her doing this, but she did it anyway, and I was going to have a public fight with someone who was trying to be helpful with me at the time. So that's what you're going to hear. Then you're going to hear some more testimony for and against the relocation measure, which was essentially, I said, defeat Measure M. You don't have to worry. We've got things under control, proposal by the city council staff. Let's hear some more of that now.
Council, per our rules of decorum, individuals may place and leave unattended audio recording devices at the designated location in council chambers on the window ledge adjacent to the press box sign. I ask that you move your device and put it there, please.
Mayor.
It's hard to use it there. It doesn't work too well.
That is according to our rules of decorum. I'd ask
according
you
to the First Amendment, I have the right to record this meeting. So
thank you. I'm not going to disrupt that right
thank
before
you.
The meeting. Okay, please move the recording device to the area.
I wonder where I need to record. That's where it's going to be.
Sir, our rules of decorum are such that you move the recording device. You can hold it there. You just can't be unattended.
I want to move around.
It can't be unattended, sir. I ask that you not disrupt the meeting. Please pick up the device.
I'm not going to disrupt it. I'm just right here.
Can I hold it?
You can hold it. Sir, thank you. Cannot be unattended. Ma'am, next speaker, please.
Is that
the speaker? That's right, there's the right. Next speaker, please. Ma'am, next speaker.
I'll hold it right there.
That's ridiculous, David. You
thank
know
you.
It.
Next speaker, please go ahead.
My name is Sally Gonzalez. I am a registered nurse. I am a member of the National Nurses United, the California Nurses Association, and I own my own home. I worked very hard to collect signatures for this petition, for this Measure M initiative. Please allow this to be voted on and wait until we find out. This does seem to be very confusing to people when you do this new ordinance. So please let the voters decide in November, and then we will go from there. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, ma'am. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, City Council. Josh Stevens, Santa Cruz City resident. I ask a simple question. Where was this ordinance when my family was wrongfully evicted? The time to have this was years ago. In my family's case, it was due to intentionally deferred maintenance. Nothing like light fixtures that fill up with water during the wettest season of all decade in Santa Cruz. That landlord only wanted to evict and upsell, only to turn my room into his office in the end with his previously occupied unit. Today, all I ask is support for this ordinance as a failsafe, regardless of what happens this November. It is time to put some accountability back in the hands of these types of negligent property managers. They exist no matter how many naysayers or good souls say otherwise. They are still present. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next week.
And that's an interesting speaker because he wants to support the rental assistance ordinance, perhaps as a fail-safe in case Measure M fails. It's not much of a fail-safe, as I've said. It's a very limited check on landlords. And I wonder about his passion, whether he's either not misguided or just deceptive. But I didn't talk to him, so I can't really say.
My name is Tom Donahue. I'm a renter in Santa Cruz and a volunteer for the Yes on M campaign. This completely misguided law, championed by our highly conflicted mayor, is some kind of alternative to Measure M, is truly a sham. This would, in fact, have catastrophic effects on the most vulnerable low- and middle-income members of our community, while doing nothing to scale back rent increases for anyone. Instead of keeping rents reasonable, this law would incentivize landlords to continue raising rents on existing tenants to just below the allowed threshold year after year, while tenants would have no choice but bear that cost without any recourse. Instead of giving tenants relief, this law would only normalize these out-of-control rent increases and allow them to continue unabated, essentially enshrining them into law. Even worse, this Gerardo's proposal would incentivize landlords to evict tenants whenever they want to raise rents more than 10% in order to avoid the risk of paying relocation fees. So, rather than providing vulnerable tenants with the means to survive, they would only kick more tenants to the curb.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker, please.
Sounds like, and I could be wrong, Terrazas is doing 1 minute per speaker. Though maybe it's 2 minutes, or maybe it's a minute and a half. Not sure. Let's listen to one more.
Hello, my name is Steve McKay. I'm a professor of sociology and helped put together over the last 2.5 years a big study of 1,900 renters in our community. I speak as a property owner, but also as a citizen, that I want to commend you for supporting the research and the forums and for the subcommittee wanting to protect renters and then passing the rent freeze. I'm concerned because the timing of this decision and this ordinance undermines the democratic process, and it makes it appear that you are undermining Measure M and the vote. I'm not going to speak on for or against Measure M. It's simply the process. If you're serious about protecting renters, as the subcommittee clearly was, then you could do things. You have the power to extend the rent freeze and to do other things so that it doesn't appear you're undermining the vote on Measure M by trying to protect renters. You don't want those optics. People are going to remember it. You don't want to taint this body by presenting yourselves as possibly tainting the election.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
And indeed, that was 1 minute he was allowed to speak. So Terrazas is having this ridiculous procedure whereby people are forced to rush through what they have to say in order to accommodate the city council schedule. Instead of having longer meetings or additional meetings, as was historically the case, the first, well, between 1988 and, I don't know, 2010 or thereabouts, although it's not clear to me when they decided to start compressing, probably around 2006 or 7 when Ryan Coonerty became mayor. And again, adopting this kind of lots of time for the staff. They always had lots of time. But less and less time for the public. Eliminate the public commissions. Rotkin was big on this one when he was mayor. Compact them. Less information about what the public has actually said, if in the minutes of meetings, or none at all, other than the fact that they have spoken. It's a series of attempts to write the public out of what little part they have in the decision-making process. At least that's how I've viewed it. So I'm going to play more of this probably on Sunday. But, you know, by that time, hopefully, maybe by tomorrow, the audio and the video will be posted on the Santa Cruz City website, as it should be. I don't know why they're taking so long. It was been 2 days already. This is the end of the second day. Give them a little leeway. They've had a day and a half to do it, so let's hope they do. If they don't, maybe I'll play some more of what I've got, but I only got really some small parts. I will play some of the commentary from people who watched this whole thing. Again, it'd be better if you can make up your own mind or hear the actual incidents as they occurred. I was able to get this one with Terrazas because it involved me. So very surprised that that happened. And it does mean that I'm going to have to be prepared to go in with video backing and the willingness to go to jail if necessary. The fact that they may decide to put me in jail simply for deciding to remain in the council during a council meeting when they want to have me remove my recorder and move it to a spot where I think it doesn't record as well, and I'm not prepared to do that. I don't think it's within their powers to require me to do that. And we'll see what they do. And we'll see what I do, too. I mean, I can't guarantee I'll not keel over in a dead faint out of disgust or whatever. So the council meeting was packed, literally packed, and there were chairs outside and a crowd of people outside. I went outside to get some... I heard that somebody had been arrested, Nora Hockman had been arrested. I wanted to get an account of what went down, and here's what I got.
Talking with Pam again just to be sure we got all the information. You saw Nora Hockman get arrested. Jeff Smedberg, she called out for him to come by. One officer was involved in the actual arrest. It happened between the doorway to the council chamber and the bathroom. It was involved. You didn't hear the conversation before, just heard her call out for Jeffrey.
Well, we weren't permitted in the chambers. Mayor Terrazas asked all the public, except for the last, 18 speakers, I think it was. Everyone else needed to clear the chambers.
Why?
So he didn't give a reason.
You felt uncomfortable with all those people?
I
got the wrong kind of job.
He did not state his reason that I heard. I didn't hear it.
Was there some prior disturbance?
Well, yes, Nora. Nora a disturbance.
Outside.
No, she was inside the chambers.
I see. And
the policeman spoke to her individually, so I assumed that David cleared the chambers so that there would not be attention on the policeman talking to...
She was actually approached inside the chamber.
What you have here is me trying to figure out what went down. And again, I learned, as I said later, from candidate Drew Glover that he had heard from council member Crone, and we got he said, she said, and then she said, he said, whatever stuff. Probably should call Chris, try to get his specifics on it. And it should be on the video. He apparently, when Nora Hockman was denouncing some of the speakers in a continuous speech that may or may not have been either from the floor or I guess it was from the floor rather than from the podium. Now, that was supposed to be a significant distinction in my case when I was arrested in the mock Nazi salute. I gave a mock Nazi salute from the aisle when they attempted to cut off three speakers, or did cut off three speakers. That was Mayor Crone's decision at that time. Well, Crone apparently hadn't really learned his lesson because he recommended that, according to Drew, that Hockman be arrested, not because he's an opponent of Nora's or even opposed what she was saying. I think they were talking about both of them are favor Measure M, but because it was impeding the council meeting and he wanted to get on with it, I guess. And Terrazas didn't want to do that, according to what I understand. This is second-hand information. So he ordered everyone out of the room except the people who are in the speaker's line. And so that's the understanding. So Nora, then when she left, wasn't arrested, but when she tried to come back in, she was blocked, and when she insisted on coming in, she was arrested and handcuffed and taken to jail and then released the next day. Again, second-hand information, that might have happened. Let's hear some more, however, from this. This is a witness who saw some of it, but you'll hear me kind of sniffing around trying to get at what happened.
Approached by whom?
The police officer.
Yes.
And do we know why she was approached inside the chambers by the police officer?
No, because no. I mean, I assume for disrupting.
Were you inside when this happened?
No. We were cleared out.
But, I mean, you were cleared out after she was arrested, right?
No.
I guess I understand.
No. No, there was no, there were, no public was in the chambers at the time of her arrest, except for some speakers. Mayor Terrazas only permitted the final so many speakers, I don't know, 15 or so.
So piecing together what might have happened when Nora attempted to get back in, and they were only letting four people in at a time at some point, and Chris Krohn denounced this later. It may have been that Nora was arrested as she walked into the chambers, and there was nobody there but the 18 speakers, the city council, and the staff, and the cops who were in the chamber, and maybe a few people had been let in. And therefore, I didn't get to any of the people who were in line, didn't know who they were. There were large crowds, so I couldn't really tell who might have seen this, and I didn't really know what was going on until I got another account from, allegedly, kind of originally from Councilmember Krohn, probably validated by what happened, as I said, in the video, if and when we get to see the city council's video. Maybe others took video as well.
You were there when Terrazas asked people to leave?
Yes.
Did you notice a disruption at that point?
Yes.
What was the nature of the disruption?
Nora did, she protested that there were two non-local gentlemen representing the Apartments Association. And she was, who were going to speak. And she didn't want them to speak. She didn't believe that it was appropriate for them to speak.
Is it because they were speaking out of order, or she just objected to them speaking at all?
She objected them to, she just objected that they were allowed to speak. That they were not local people, that this did not affect, well, she was protesting very strongly.
And so,
and stood her ground. I mean, she would not let up, and that
was she blocking them from getting to the mic, or just standing up and speaking about the issue?
She spoke about the issue. Yeah.
And this was at
she
the.
She couldn't block.
Was she at the mic speaking, or from the audience?
Just from the audience. Well, she was in the front, front row. And she turned around and addressed the audience.
And was she, did she get much support from the audience?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, definitely. But she also, there were some people who told her to sit down and be quiet, too.
Mixed reaction.
Yeah, because there is a very divided group of people, you know, pro Measure M and in opposition of Measure M.
How long would you say the colloquy between her and the audience continued? Or her and the council?
A few minutes. Very, very, very short span of time.
What was Mayor Terrazas' immediate response? What did he tell her?
He asked her to stop interrupting the proceedings. You know, he just kept asking.
What did she say?
I thought the police officer who came to the front of the building was quite composed and patient, but eventually, I mean, you know, he did what he was
delegated to do.
Yeah.
But he didn't shoot her, at least. That's good.
He didn't what?
Didn't shoot her.
Oh, of course not.
You'd be surprised. No, some of my black friends have complained about that.
Yeah, yeah. He seemed very restrained initially, and then Matt Starman handling her at the time of the arrest.
Did the mayor request that she be removed and have her arrested?
I didn't hear that.
So in other words, it did seem you weren't aware the initiative came from him, or rather it came from the office.
No, he didn't. The mayor did not make that public.
Hi, guy.
I think it'd be good for you to get another view.
Well, we've got yours, and I'll try to get another one. And again, we've been talking with
Pam Stern.
This time I got recorded, Pam. So
oh.
Talking with Pam again to just to reach.
And no, we only talked. We did talk with Pam twice. The first time didn't work, and the second time did. So there you have it. At least one person's account of what she saw. And that was happening at the afternoon session, probably between 2:30 and 5, is my guess.
And now a Randy Rainbow break. Unfortunately, Randy has not done anything new that I can find on YouTube, so I'm going to jump back to something he did a month or two ago. But you might still enjoy it. First, a disclaimer. I don't like Randy's jumping on board with the Russiagate conspiracy gang. I think it's a bunch of horseshit and hasn't been shown to be true. And I think it just empowers the intelligence, I should say, the spook community. I don't want to use the word intelligence. And the military and those who suddenly the FBI are getting all kinds of credibility that they should not have at all because Trump is playing the braggadocio show person and because he's a failed